Good morning. It's Wednesday, May 8th. The war in the Middle East is now 215 days old, 7 months yesterday, in fact. I'm Jonathan Schanzer, Senior Vice President for Research at Foundation for Defense of Democracies. Welcome back to the FDD Morning Brief. I'm still working the campus angle, folks, and you'll see more of my stuff out there in the media in the coming days. But today, the focus is going to be on the news out of the Middle East. And believe me, there's a ton of it. So buckle up for another episode of the FDD Morning Brief coming at you live from downtown Washington, D.C., the belly of the beast. Our guest on today's episode is Congressman Michael McCaul. He's a representative for the great state of Texas. He's also the chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, so he's obviously got a lot to say about the content that we track here at the FDD Morning Brief. Hang tight for a few minutes and you'll hear from him. If you think the long-awaited Rafah operation is underway, it's not. The Israelis are getting cheeky here. Sure, they killed 20 terrorists, and yes, they found some tunnels, but this is not the main event, folks. The Israelis went into eastern Rafah. This is not a Hamas stronghold. It's barely a suburb. The IDF was, however, operating around the Philadelphia corridor, the border area between Gaza and Egypt. I've now heard from multiple sources that Egypt has operated large tunnels under the Philadelphia corridor for years. The tunnels enabled Hamas to replenish its arsenal after multiple rounds of fighting with Israel. The tunnels also enabled Hamas personnel to travel in and out of Gaza undetected. As for the current operation, some say Bibi wants to show the Israeli public that he is making good on his promise to invade Rafah even after Biden forbade him, so a limited operation might check that box. Another interpretation is that the Israelis are testing the water to see if they can push the envelope and ultimately fight the war they had planned. Incremental warfare, if you will. The best interpretation is that Israel took the Philadelphia corridor so that Hamas loses its lifeline to Egypt. So all eyes now on the IDF engineers. If they start digging for tunnels, the Israelis will be one step closer to destroying the terrorist group that launched the attacks of 10/7, not to mention the regional war that Israel has little choice but to finish. Now for your headlines. AP and Reuters report that Iran is illegally moving oil through Malaysia to finance its proxies. Treasury is on this. Undersecretary of the Treasury Brian Nelson is currently on a four-day swing to Singapore and Malaysia. The purpose of his trip is to tackle terror financing in Southeast Asia. Spoiler alert, Iran has been evading sanctions by using Malaysian companies to transfer oil to Singapore and then throughout the region. This has to stop. And so does Malaysia's support for Hamas, by the way, which we should probably talk about more here on the FDD Morning Brief. I looked into this issue back in 2018 and then again in 2021. Malaysia has long been a staging ground for Hamas, planning, training, moving money, you name it, Hamas has done it in Malaysia. And this isn't happening on the down low. The government welcomes it. Some say that Malaysia is actually an option for Hamas headquarters if Hamas is ever driven fully out of Gaza. That would be interesting because the Mossad has actually whacked a bunch of Hamas operatives in Malaysia over the years, sometimes in broad daylight. So let's see how that works out for them. Headline two. 24 state attorney generals are calling on Congress to permanently end U.S. funding to UNRWA. I'm a big fan of states weighing in on foreign policy. Over the years, we've seen individual states establish policies to financially isolate the Iranian regime. Some have also made it financially painful for those who try to boycott the state of Israel. Good for these attorney generals for weighing in here, too. UNRWA doesn't deserve another dollar. UNRWA preaches anti-Semitism in its schools. Its employees celebrated 10/7. Some even participated in the massacre or took part in holding hostages. Hamas uses UNRWA facilities to store and launch rockets. Just this week, the IDF destroyed a Hamas command center underneath an UNRWA complex. The U.S. should not be in the business of funding terrorism, full stop. And headline three, the Jordanian monarchy is slamming Israel again and again and again. King Abdullah visited the White House and the monarch told President Biden that Israel's move into Rafah is a catastrophe. He claimed that the Israeli offensive will cause a Palestinian massacre. Forget about taking out Hamas. The official Jordanian readout didn't even mention the terrorist group by name. Meanwhile, Jordan's Queen Rania was speaking in Los Angeles. As ever, she heaped one-sided blame on Israel for the Gaza war that Hamas started. Oh, and the Jordanian embassy yesterday issued a press release slamming West bankers who tried to block aid from going into Gaza because they don't think there should be any assistance going in until the hostages are released. That is reasonable. As we have discussed before, Jordan has enjoyed decades of peace with Israel, and that peace grants Jordan a host of material benefits and some intangible ones, too. Seems to me that Amman is forgetting itself. It's forgetting that it is still a weak state. It needs Israel. I would go so far as to say that without Israel's assistance and defense, Jordan would be an endangered species in that tough neighborhood known as the Middle East. All right, it's time for to hear from Congressman Michael McCaul. He represents the 10th District of the great state of Texas. He's also chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee. Incidentally, before being elected to Congress, he was the chief of counterterrorism and national security for the U.S. Attorney's Office in Texas. So he knows a few things about Iran, Hamas, Hezbollah, and that broader matrix of bad actors that Israel is currently battling. I caught up with him yesterday for this interview that we recorded just for you right here on the FDD Morning Brief. Welcome, Chairman Michael McCaul.
Hey, John, thanks for having me.
Well, great to have you on the program. It's an honor for us. Let me dive right in here. I want to talk about Iran's oil. Iran's average oil exports reached a six-year high recently. That's tens of billions of dollars for the regime to use in its global terror campaign, the war that it's waging right now across the Middle East. It's clear that the sanctions in place are simply not being enforced. How is Congress handling the administration's lax sanctions enforcement, and how big of a priority should it be for Congress?
Well, it was. In fact, I got that passed in the provision of the supplemental bill that I wrote, and we got it passed through Congress, signed into law. The administration was not enforcing the sanctions on energy from Iran, particularly to China. And this was somewhere between $80 to $100 billion that was going to China and then going straight into the Ayatollah's terror operations that they've conducted against Israel through their proxies. In this case, Hamas, Hezbollah, Houthi rebels, and the militias. And so we also put sanctions that had expired back in place on the drones and rockets that Iran was exporting to Russia to kill Ukrainians, but also the same ones that they used with their proxies to fire into Israel to kill Israelis. I don't understand why the administration let those expire, other than they wanted this grand nuclear energy deal with Iran, which I think was extremely naive.
Well, I can't disagree with you there. Let me actually ask you about another administration policy right now. The Biden administration is expected to soon issue a report on Israel's compliance with international law. Ahead of this, some lawmakers have pressed the administration to find Israel in violation of several U.S. statutes with the aim of cutting off security assistance. I know you follow this closely. Do you believe that Israel is conducting its war against Hamas in line with the existing U.S. conditions on assistance?
You know, the idea that Israel, and of course, we have reports that the ICC may be issuing arrest warrants. We are awaiting this national security memo certification to come from the White House to Congress. I think the National Security Council split on this determination, so they are delaying that report to Congress. But it would be extremely dangerous, I think, to say that Israel was in violation of human rights laws and then deny all weapons assistance to Israel. That would, I just can't fathom the outcome of that determination. And I hope the Secretary of State is wide open to not going with that proposal. The memo before him right now, one part of his team says to say they're in violation, Israel, and the other team says not to. And so, again, I think that'd be a grave mistake right now when Israel is moving into Rafah to complete this last phase of their military operation to eradicate Hamas. What a horrible message to send from their greatest ally that we're no longer going to send you weapons. And by the way, you're in violation of human rights laws, opening up the idea the ICC could serve arrest warrants on the prime minister and the secretary of defense and the IDF is really outrageous.
It is outrageous. And I got to say, I'll just add that, you know, you have to remember that other allies around the region, other allies around the world are watching. And when we start making these moves, they're going to see what it's like being an American ally that all of a sudden is under fire from the administration itself. That's obviously not something that's going to help make new allies for us in the future.
Correct.
Look, I took note of your recent letter to the administration, getting back to Iran here, where you and several colleagues pressed the White House for clarifications on sanctions waivers that have enabled Iran and Russia to build out portions of Iran's nuclear program. You've been vocal on the need to hold Iran to account for its nuclear violations. How concerned are you right now that our adversaries are coordinating with what at times looks like a wink and a nod from Washington? And I guess maybe on top of that, what more can be done to hold these adversaries to account?
Well, and they're all tied together. You know, Putin is tied to the Ayatollah, tied to Chairman Xi, North Korea. We know that they're at 60% enrichment and they can, in a matter of days, get to 90%, which would be nuclear grade. They would have to get a nuclear warhead, perhaps from Russia or North Korea. But the fact is, they're getting dangerously close. The IAEA, you know, had a cyber attack where Iran took all their investigative documents. They kicked them out of facilities where they were conducting inspections. They took the cameras out. Simply, they can't be trusted. Yet this administration has this naive approach that they're going to work out this grand bargain with Iran when we know that's not the fact. And I think, John, to make it even more incomprehensible is that our special envoy for Iran, Robert Malley, is under investigation by the FBI for violating his security clearances. Now, we don't know all the facts. But I do think he mishandled classified information that very likely could have ended up in our adversary's hands. The bottom line is the Biden administration is just way too close to the Iranians and the Ayatollah, and they're not putting deterrence and projecting strength, but rather weakness, which always invites aggression and conflict. And that's what we're seeing in the Middle East now.
It's a common theme here on the FTD Morning Brief, and love to hear you echo it because we've been saying it now for months. On another note, the recently passed Foreign Assistance Supplemental, it included a lot of historic wins for national security. And by the way, I should thank you right here emphatically, because I know that your leadership played a key role in getting that package across the finish line. The bill, obviously, it not only included funding to our allies like Israel, but it also paved the way for divestment from TikTok, authorized the seizure of frozen Russian assets, and it strengthened some sanctions on the regime in Iran. What was the congressional message, in your view, to the regime in Iran and other adversaries like China and Russia? What is Congress trying to say here right now?
Well, that we support our allies, both NATO and also Israel, that we support Taiwan and want to counter China in the Pacific, that we support our NATO allies against Putin and his aggression in Ukraine. And so that's in a very strong statement. What I was very pleased to be able to get into my package, part of the supplemental. Quite frankly, I was surprised the Democrats went along with it, but it was the Repo Act, which allows us to attach to Russian sovereign assets to help pay for the damage they have caused. The TikTok divestment is huge to stop letting the PRC manipulate algorithms, particularly with our children, into the United States. I mean, it's a spy balloon in everybody's phone, but it also controls a narrative. And a lot of these younger people, this is their only source of news. So for instance, you look at the protesters on the campuses today, if you typed in, you know, Israel and Palestinian, you're going to get a very warped perception of how Israel is not the victim, but rather Hamas, and that Israel is the occupier. And so, and I think that's why you're seeing what you're seeing on the college campuses today.
Well, actually, let me ask you about the college campuses, because I saw some of your tweets and I agreed with every word that you typed out there. And so please just tell us a little bit about how you view what's happening on campus right now. I mean, I was at Austin, University of Texas at Austin, a couple of days after they cleared off some of these protesters. And what we heard was that 2/3 of the people that were arrested were actually not even students. I mean, do you believe that this is being driven by outside forces? How do you view what's going on?
I do. And I think there's a Iranian propaganda that's driving this, Hamas. I think, you know, as you mentioned, more than half the so-called students protesting weren't even students. We don't know where they came from. We don't know where the funding stream, you know, comes from. And on college campuses of all places where they're to be educated, yet they seem to have an acute lack of education in terms of what is really happening in the Middle East with Israel and a terrorist organization like Hamas. A very uneducated point of view, in my judgment. You know, as a son of a World War II, son of a bombardier, a B-17 who bombed the Nazis and lived through the Holocaust, I never thought I'd see this in my lifetime. And this resurgence of anti-Semitism with our young people and swastikas, I just find highly offensive. And it's got to stop. And I got to tell you, John, I think it's blown back on both the administration, but also on the so-called Palestinian movement in the United States.
I tend to agree. And I think we're going to be learning more and more about that. I'm doing my part. FDD is as well. And we'll certainly let you know what we find. But last question for you here before we let you go. I want to talk about the border. I know that's important to you as a Texan and as the chair of the House Foreign Affairs Committee. We've, of course, seen the reports that the border has encountered thousands of immigrants with criminal histories, many more evading detention. When you think about the serious national security threats facing America today, how do you rank the border? And do you believe that there is a vulnerability that adversaries like China or Iran or Hezbollah are being, are these the guys that are exploiting this border? Have you seen evidence to suggest that?
And I have to be a little bit careful, but yes. I mean, and I chaired the Homeland Security Committee before I chaired now the Foreign Affairs Committee. There's a great tie between the two. And I've always been worried about the exposure from our southern border as a route for terrorist activity. So not only do you have the cartels and the fentanyls coming in, killing hundreds of thousands of Americans, and not only do you see a criminal enterprise being built in the United States of sex and drug trafficking, but what scares me the most, John, and keeps me up at night, are the hundreds on the terror watch list who have been able to come in. And then who else? You know, as ISIS-K is growing back in strength in Afghanistan after the debacle, you know, evacuation and surrender to the Taliban. They obviously did an external operation in Russia. They've shown capability to do this in the United States. So we know the southern border is wide open. It's vulnerable. We know that Chinese nationals are coming in, and many of them, by the way, and we don't really know why, but we also know that cells could potentially be coming in related to ISIS-K. And I think that's what concerns me the most. It could be a question of not if, but when our FBI director says all lights are blinking red right now, I tend to agree with him.
Sobering stuff. Thank you, Chairman Michael McCaul, for joining us today on the FDD Morning Brief. Hope you'll come back again.
Great, John. Thanks for having me.
All right, here's what FTD has on tap for you today. In a piece for Foreign Policy, Connor Pfeiffer from FTD Action teamed up with Ryan Berg from CSIS, the Center for Strategic and International Studies, to scrutinize China's growing political and economic influence in Mexico. They highlight the Biden administration's limited response to Beijing's maneuvers to date and implore leaders in both Mexico City and Washington to establish crucial red lines that I believe are vital for the national and economic security interests of many here in the Western Hemisphere. FTD China Program Chair Matt Pottinger joined FTD Senior Advisor Aaron McLean's School of War podcast, along with Congressman Mike Gallagher, to discuss their recent foreign affairs piece. Matt and Mike's article lays out in considerable detail why the United States urgently needs to develop and implement a victory strategy against the Chinese Communist Party. Check that out wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
And finally, FDD's International Organizations Program just produced a couple of new products. I encourage you to check them out. The first is a memo from Rich Goldberg and Bonnie Glick detailing the specific agencies and parties that could immediately take over the roles and responsibilities of UNRWA in Gaza and beyond. As Congress weighs a permanent freeze on U.S. funding to UNRWA, Rich and Bonnie make a compelling case for why it's not just possible, it's actually preferred. Rich also joined Cliff May for the most recent foreign policy episode, along with Alan Goldsmith from United Against Nuclear Iran. They explore all of the failings they've seen across the UN since 10/7. It's probably a long podcast. Okay, that's a wrap for today's show from Deep Inside the Swamp. Read our expert analysis on our website, fdd.org. Read our quick takes on X at FDD and support our work with a tax-deductible donation at fdd.org/invest. Tune in Friday for another exciting episode of the FDD Morning Brief. This one will be featuring Lorenzo Vadino. He's a terrorism expert with some insights into the people stoking the unrest on college campuses, including the campus where he works, George Washington University. Until then, I'm Jonathan Shanzer. Signing off for FDD.